Welcome to the conference room with this week's guest, Brooke Young.
If marketing says, well, marketing does say, I am good, buy from me, PR tells you the story of why you should buy from them.
Welcome to the conference room, a weekly podcast where business leaders and growth experts kindly share their experiences, actionable tips, and secrets to successfully grow a business. If you like the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a five-star review. It'll really help us out. And I really hope you enjoy this week's episode. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to the conference room. Good afternoon and welcome to the conference room. I'm joined by Brooke Young. Brooke is an international publicist, PR guru, and branding consultant. She works with clients across the globe and helps them create, develop, and promote powerful messages through heart-centered storytelling. She's formerly worked on air with Fox Sports. She's competed in the Miss America organization and volunteers as a communication liaison for the first prenatal care agency in West Africa. Brooke frequently works with children as a professional public speaker and children's book author, where she educates on therapy dogs and volunteering. And I'm delighted to say that she's found time in her incredibly busy schedule to come and chat to us here in the conference room. So Brooke Young, good afternoon and welcome to the conference room.
Thank you. That was such an energetic, it was just a very, very energetic intro. I did love it. And I did like everyone before this call, he changed my verbiage and he called me a guru. And I have to say, I'm pretty honored about that.
Well, there you go. So every hero has an origin story and you're the hero of our story. So tell me, how did you get from graduating college to being this international publicist, PR guru, and branding consultant?
So I'll be honest, it was not what I imagined myself doing. I have always done talent work. So I've done professional theater from a young age, a lot of talent work, and that's what I'm good at. I'm fairly good at speaking in front of people. And so to take that behind the scenes really just happened very organically. People said that I had a knack for it. So I started to really use my business skills and merge those with the on-air talent skills and realized there was a huge gap in the market needed for people that knew how to tell stories in a way that was really creative, tremendously artful, but still had impact financially for their business. And I said, hey, I'll do it. And I've loved it. I really enjoy it. I'm happy I did it. Although I have to get out there in front of the kids, to, you know, kind of get my joy back speaking. So I like to speak to elementary students.
Great stuff. We'll talk more about that in a little while, because that's something that I'm super interested in as well. So something that that I'd like to dig into a little bit is, when you go to a client, what are the primary problems that you see that they're experiencing, whether they're aware of it or not? What are the kind of pain points that they're experiencing that belie there's a problem that you can help them solve?
Sure. So there are different types of clients. Some of those clients are going to struggle with not having clear messaging. So maybe they're like an octopus. They have eight arms and they're all over the place. Some of the clients will really struggle without support. So that means they feel nervous on interviews. They don't know how to speak in a way that really lets their presence shine. And I call myself a hand holder in that I love to help people develop that presence. That is a big part of what I do, is I'm not only going to get you engagements, I really want you to shine at those engagements. Those are two of the major problems. A third one is they just don't have the time to do it. And they don't want to spend hours writing failed pitches, that it just maybe because they haven't had the experience doing it, their success rate isn't quite as high. And they say, look, I don't have the time in my day. I simply don't want to have it. I'd like you to do it. So those are probably the three primary people.
Right. Okay. So tell me, let's take this all the way back to basics. Okay. What is PR and why do companies need it?
PR is, what an interesting question. So PR is essentially just, what is your story? And then how do we communicate that to the world? If I were going to put it in the most basic terms, it is, what does your company care about? If you're a solo entrepreneur, it's, what do I care about? How do I weave that in with my business, with the things that I do? And then tell the world, hey, look, I have this amazing story. I have this amazing thing to share. And here is how it brings value to your audience. because that is the big part. You would know this, anyone that's a podcast host, anyone that's a TV anchor, you have to bring value to your audience, right? And so you say, here's what I care about, here's what I do, and this is why it matters for the people you're looking to serve. That's the most basic fundamental. Anyone in the world can do their own PR if they take time out of their life and say, this is what I care about, this is what I do, and this is why it matters to people.
So that's fascinating. When you talk about, here's what I care about, are you talking about the company's values, why they do what they do? Or are you talking more kind of, I care about social justice, I care about the environment, or are we talking about specifically my brand and its values that inform our delivery to our client base?
I think it can really depend on the person. Solo entrepreneurs will be different than a larger business. But if we boil it down, we think of emotions and our storytelling as a pyramid. The bottom layer is always going to be that emotional foundation. It's going to be, I do this type of work because I want to help people, because I want women to be empowered to grow their finances. I want to change the way that people look at social justice. Like you mentioned, there's always an emotional undercurrent to every business. So if you peel that back and say, what does this business care about? That is one of the major ways I position my people. And I never position them, like you said, as a character. They always have interest in likes and dislikes beyond just what they do. Because if I were to say, this person's a screenwriter, that would interest you maybe if you had an interest in screenwriting. If I say he's a screenwriter, he has a background in this and this and this, and he's hysterical, and position him as a human, that matters a lot.
Why is that?
Positioning as a human? Well, we don't like cardboard characters, right? We don't enjoy that. And so if you look at yourself objectively, if you were doing your own PR, what skills do I have? What do I do on the daily basis? And why do I do what I do? You'll usually find answers in there. From there, you can take your story and say, okay, I do what I do because of this. It matters because of this. And it's going to matter to your audience because of this.
Right. Okay. Can you perhaps give me an example, okay, of a client that you have or you've had, right? Obviously not giving away anything confidential, but a client where you walked in and it was like, oh my goodness, these people are all over the place, or it's a complete desert here, right? And the steps that you took to transform them or their business through PR and the fruits that they experienced as a result.
I don't like to play favorites, but I will play favorites here. I would say that my favorite client is probably Hindi's Libraries. If no one has looked them up, please do. They're an international nonprofit. They've donated 400,000 books to kids that are in homeless shelters and literacy deserts and everything that you could imagine.
What was the name again?
Hindi's Libraries.
Hindi's Libraries.
Hindi's. Yes. So they're based in Long Island, and I just love them. When they reached out to work with me, I was initially a little nervous. They were my first nonprofit client. And one of the things that they needed was social partnerships. They had been on Good Morning America, which was wonderful. They'd been on a lot of high-level podcasts, but what they did not have was active social supporters. So they didn't have partnerships. And I said, okay. So I kind of got my hands in there. I was like, what can we do? And with a topic like donating books to kids, you can be very creative. We've worked to get them partnerships with Atlanta Zoo, with Miss New York and the Miss America organization, with Miss America Volunteer, DHL. We recently put this together for Black History Month. So DHL, the shipping company, to catch everybody up, donated 7,000, I think it's 7,000 books to children all across the United States. And DHL was able to partner with the organization. So all of the shipping was paid for and taken care of. So getting partnerships like that, even outside of traditional media, makes a huge, huge difference in how your organization is perceived and the amount of people that you can reach.
Wow, that's amazing. And how did PR achieve that?
two things. Luck. Number one, there's always an element of luck. Okay. I'm going to be totally honest. You hit someone at a good time of the day, or they're in a good mood because they ate a chocolate. I don't know. But then number two, really just breaking down and very strategically pitching and saying, okay, why would someone care to partner? What is this organization? How can I explain it in a way that is very concise because people are busy? And how can I bring value to that organization to get them to partner? Because it can't be one-sided, right? It has to be mutually beneficial. And so I looked at how DHL could get, you know, obviously social clout from it, how they could get earned media, how they could get social media attention. And it became a big win-win for both people.
Right. So do you see PR often being about the win-win? Is it a case of, if I'm going to try and get my message out, jumping on the back of someone else's, borrowing their audience, having them borrow my audience, is that something you're often looking for? Or was that just something that, because they were looking for partnerships, that seemed like a good fit for that particular engagement?
I think it's a case-by-case basis. I don't think for solo entrepreneurs that partnerships are necessarily quite as common. I think they're also harder to organize for solo entrepreneurs, but with them, they are international. Obviously, they have supporters across the nation and they have multiple people working on their team. So getting that together was easier. I love partnerships. I'm a partnerships girl. Not everybody is. So it's a personal decision. I'm also an earned media girl. So we love it all here.
Great stuff. Looks like there was a lot of wins there. So if a company wants to do PR, okay, and they want to read, whether it's a solo entrepreneur, a solopreneur or a small company, whatever, what steps would you recommend that they take so that when their pitch is received by a media organization, that they're not automatically forwarded to the advertising department? Because in preparation of this conversation, I spoke to a few people and I was asking them I'm going to be talking to a PR guru. What are the kind of questions that you think I should be asking? And the most common one that came up was, how do we stop our pitches being forwarded to the advertising department? So
yeah,
what would you say are the key mistakes they might be making that's leading to that for that to happening, and or the steps they ought to be taking to make sure that their press release or whatever is seen as something newsworthy rather than advertising worthy?
Sure. So if you kind of think, I always describe it like sisters. I'm a big sister girl. So if you have two sisters, marketing and advertising is one of those sisters and PR is the other one. Let's start with marketing and advertising, all kind of the same situation. If marketing says, well, marketing does say, I am good, buy from me. PR tells you the story of why you should buy from them. So with PR, we're not saying I am the best public speaker in the entire world. That is what marketing would say to try to get sales, because the ROI on marketing is sales, right? I have a degree in marketing too. So ROI on marketing is sales. PR, the ROI is a little bit more fluid. It's going to be impressions. It's going to be sales related. It's going to be clicks on your website. It's going to be followers on your email list, awareness, things like that. And that story would look like when I was 7, I began publicly speaking. I love to educate on topics like this and this and this. With all of XYZ happening in the world, I believe it's relevant. So I don't want to take this in a dark direction, but it's the only example I have right now.
Right.
For example, if somebody educated, let's say on mental health, let's say she spoke to mental health for colleges and high schoolers, in light of the things that have happened in the world, especially Michigan State, where they had another recent mass shooting, she could say, with all that's happening in the world, I want teens to know how to take care of their mental health. I want to break it down. I want to give actionable steps. And here is how. With PR, I am often saying, this person has actionable steps. This person can break it down. This person can help. The difference is marketing would say, I am the best. Does that answer your question?
It does, yeah. And it's I think what's really interesting is that very often it sounds like the the company, the individual, whatever, has the right stuff to say, but isn't necessarily saying it in the right way.
There's a lot of different ways you can say it. I mean, I learned completely through trial and error. I have sent so many poor pitches. I have framed so many stories the wrong way. It is a trial and an error, and it's understanding who's on the other end. That person is a person. And another tip, don't make it super long. That person does not want to read 15 paragraphs.
Right, no, absolutely. So when I was giving your intro, referred to that you help your clients create, develop, and promote powerful messages through heart-centered storytelling. Okay, mm-hmm. What is heart-centered storytelling?
I knew you were going to ask this question. And heart-centered storytelling is difficult to quantify, but I am going to do the best that I can do. When I say heart-centered, I mean stories that have a purpose beyond the 2 minutes that someone watches them. The messages and the stories that I work to put together, I want them to live in people's minds for 7 days afterwards, 13 days afterwards, because they're drying their hair with the blow dryer. And like, man, that woman had an amazing point. That's the type of stories I want to put together. And to do that, we have to play on that emotional and heart component. We have to have humanity, because it's the same reason we don't remember our college textbooks. Sure, they were knowledgeable and they were great, but did they have the human element that made us connect to them? Most of them didn't. And so it's hard for people to remember what their textbooks say, but it's easy for them to remember facts in the frame of a story. So does that answer it? I was going to give an example. So I do a lot of work with therapy dogs. For those that don't know therapy dogs, service dogs are love in, therapy dogs are love out. Service dogs love their handler. They're, for example, a guide dog. Therapy dogs are love out. They love the world. They love people. They visit disaster areas and schools and all of that. So I talk a lot. In my children's book is about therapy dogs. So that would look like me saying to children, I'll often say, Murray was love out, which was one of my therapy dogs. He was love out if I want them to get it. He used to climb up in people's beds. He liked to walk down the halls and let everybody pet his head. So I give those vibrant storytelling details so that people can imagine themselves there. In a business context, which is different than that context, you would say, I started my company, when I was X, Y, and Z years old, all I had was an apple. I mean, seriously, all I had was this. I was stressed, I was frazzled, and giving that story so that they can see you throughout time.
Right. That's really interesting. So it's interesting because people talk a lot about the hero's journey, and they talk about the whole Moses climbing to the top of the mountain and all this kind of imagery when they're talking about sales letters and establishing that credibility when you're initiating a relationship, which could be in the form of an article, it could be in the form of the opening of a webinar or a sales sequence. It's interesting when you talk about using this kind of language of, when I just started out, I only had an apple, or I was up in the middle of the night stressing over how I was going to make payroll or whatever it is. It's really interesting that
it's a tangible factor.
Yeah.
I love things to be, obviously I'm kind of an intangible person. It's what I do, but I like to have tangible emotions attached. And so I will never send a pitch or something without a tangible, visceral emotion attached, even if that is as pure as I want people to be shocked by how much information they can get from Bob. There needs to be kind of like an emotion, like, oh, and then I will write it like it's shocking how much Bob has. Like, Bob is an accomplished and amazing speaker. He has wealths of knowledge and wealths of information. So I'll just make it very like, oh my goodness, he has so much to share, kind of that shocking factor. Right. So there is the underlying emotional current to everything that I do. That's not to say I don't care about ROI, though. Some people take it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And ROI ultimately is the ultimate justification, isn't it? If people engage with someone in PR or publicity, and then 3 months later, 6 months later, probably 6 months later, they haven't seen the needle move at all, they'll probably call into question the effectiveness of the engagement, right?
And I think you would also question, did this person, because that's a big part of it, did this person angle my story in the right way? There are a lot of different ways to angle a story. There are a lot of different ways to frame a business. The way that you frame the story you are trying to tell is the most important decision you'll ever make. And you need to find someone that gets what you're trying to do. Not somebody that gets what you're currently doing, but somebody that gets what you're trying to do in the long game. If I don't connect with a client and see where they're trying to go, I have a very, very hard time pitching them. And so when you're evaluating somebody, try to explain your long-term vision or your long-term game to them to see if they can understand that, to frame your story the right way. Because you're not framing it for right now. You are framing it for where you want to be.
Right. Okay, so in this day and age, and things may change in the future, but right now, anybody, as far as I'm aware, can hang their shingle and say, I'm a PR strategist, you know, I'm a branding consultant, right? So, which gives rise to the reality that there's good and bad out there, okay? So, as someone who I can personally attest is one of the good ones, what guidance would you give to people who are assessing a PR organization, an individual, someone in branding, to determine whether or not they're any good at the outset?
Okay.
What questions should somebody be asking, and the kind of, you know, clues that might be dropped to determine whether or not someone's going to be any?
Number one, does your body feel good when you talk to this person? I know that Simon does not like the intangibles, but it is important. Do I feel relaxed? Do I feel comfortable sharing? And does this person listen? If you are looking at a publicist that is not listening to what you're wanting, to the vision you're wanting, that is in my opinion, that is a red flag. Number two, can this person show a variation? So if somebody has a spiritual healer client and somebody has a attorney client, those publications should be different that they've pitched those people to. The results should be different. So you always want to look for, where has this person been able to place, and does it resonate for that client, or does it feel kind of slapped together? Because if I placed a defense attorney in a Holistic magazine or Shape magazine, that would beg the question as to why he was placed there.
Right. Well, let me just follow up on that. Do you see any value in going to a specialist? So, for example, my day job is in headhunting, specifically in cybersecurity. If I were to go with, and obviously I wouldn't, but if I were to go with a different PR company, would there be value in me going to a company that specializes in recruitment companies, or perhaps a company that specializes in cybersecurity because my audience is their audience, or is there no real value in a specialist because it's all the same stuff, and pretty much having access to something that's specific to my market would be relatively easy for someone to find just by doing a couple of hours of research? Or is there value in that market speciality?
There is value in it. It really depends on what you're looking for. So if we're talking cybersecurity, PR is also established relationships. I have relationships with podcast hosts, with TV anchors, with all sorts of people, and they honestly consider me one of their best friends. I am so blessed to have that. People that maybe work in food PR, there are people that do that all day long. They have very, very close and established relationships in the food sector. And so that does matter. However, if you get a vibe that it might not be the best fit, there are also people that are just generally really good at PR. You should always evaluate if that person has contacts, though. And if they don't have contacts, are they willing to make them? And are they confident that they can pitch your story the right way to make them?
Right. Okay.
I've taken on industries where I have no prior specialization and I've done really well, but I've also taken on one industry that I don't do well in. And so I'm really, really aware. And I say, look, I'm not good at that. I'm going to pass you on to somebody that will do much better than me.
Right. Okay, great stuff. So tell me about your the volunteer work that you do, the public speaking, and you're a children's book author, right?
I am. And I swear that I do children's book authoring to keep me sane because there are a lot of crises that come up in my day job. I'm very calm. Simon knows me. I'm pretty calm. But, you know, from missed interviews to like Zoom links not being sent correctly, I'm like, oh, so when I need a dopamine hit, I go out to the children and I work with children, you know, in my other company as well. So I speak with them about volunteering and therapy dogs. And we go through an entire presentation. So they give me my dopamine.
So if somebody wants to follow in your footsteps, what three tips could you give them for them to be successful?
Number one, write down the things that you are excellent about speaking on. So it doesn't matter how niche or how broad those things are, but what are the things that you can speak about all day long and you do it excellently and you have proven facts or proven tips? That's the big part. A lot of people will say I can speak on mindset. And my question to that is, what subset of mindset do you speak on? And what tangible tips or actionable strategies do you have? Number two, start building relationships. And don't do relationship building as always you are going to give to me. What value can I give this host? How can I make their life this much better today? Because that is essentially our job. We are there to help our clients, but we are also there to make that journalist or that anchor or that radio host job easier. We make their life better by vetting and bringing quality people to their doorstep and letting them know that they can trust us by bringing those quality people. Number three, build a really, really good open relationship with your clients and be honest with them about the process. Be honest with them if something's not going to work.
Absolutely. You know, I find certainly on my in my headhunting business, the more you can qualify things out at the outset, the less aggravation and headaches you cause yourself further down the line. So no, I completely agree with that. So Brooke, if people wanted to learn more about you, how can they go about doing that?
Sure. So people contact me directly or they contact me through Facebook. Facebook is the primary place that people find me, including Simon. So Brooke Young under Facebook.
So Brooke, what's next for you and for your various businesses?
I love the what. One of my clients actually has an entire magazine devoted to what's next for women. And so when I get on the phone with her or off the phone with her, she'll ask me that question. And it is increasingly difficult to answer. So the what's next question is always hard for me. I'll continue to do art until I get too old, I guess. And then I do have my second children's book, which should come out in about November.
Great stuff. And I'm sure if people wanted to get their hands on that, Facebook is the way to do it.
I will work on the other things soon, but I do not have time to focus on my own brand because I'm really, really busy building other people's.
Which is what every client of a PR guru wants to hear. So with that, I'll make sure we also put links to Hindi's libraries in the show notes as well if people want to learn more about them and how they can maybe get involved with donating books, because it sounds like an amazing organization and one that people should certainly get behind. But in the meantime, Brooke Young, thank you so much for joining us here in the conference room.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up next week on The Conference Room, I'll be talking to CEO of application security vendor SafeStack, Laura Belmain.
Those things, in all honesty, have been more important to us than the lived experience in role in these first few years, because we can teach a lot of things. Somebody could bring skills and experience we need, but if they're a bad cultural fit, it causes pain. The other thing is hiring people from really late.
Thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. And make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, to see all the other episodes and to get access
to the show notes and resources mentioned in this episode. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your network, or better still, go on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other podcast platform and leave us a 5-star review. It'll only take you a moment, but it'll mean the world to us. And please don't hesitate to tell us which topics you'd like us to cover in future episodes. To get in touch, drop us a line in the comments section or send us a message on social media. Just search for The Conference Room Podcast or me, Simon Lader, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or TikTok. I'm always open to a conversation. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you'll be alerted when a new episode goes live every week. Thanks so much for listening to The Conference Room, and until next time, keep talking.